All right, good afternoon, everybody. It's Tuesday afternoon, November 9th, 1 o'clock, and we're doing Chem3L. And yeah, I failed to get the experiment up once again, but I'll give you a good due date for it that I will put it out till next week. It'll be fine. And I'm not going to give you a new assignment this week, so we'll just catch up with that one that we had from last week. But like I said, I was understanding that you guys have an exam, and I didn't know if you guys had anything that you wanted me to review for this week in terms of things for the exam, problems that you were having issues with. Doesn't have to be just from lab stuff, just the types of exam type questions and things, homework type questions that you guys were dealing with that you found particularly challenging. Is anything coming up? Any ideas? And maybe not. Maybe you guys don't have anything. And that's okay too. Let's see. I know that you're working on or have been working on PV equals NRT for Gauss law stuff. And that we had a couple of different Gauss laws, that you had the standard PV equals NRT. You had the combined Gauss law, P1 V1 over N1 T1 is equal to P2 V2 over N2 T2. As combined Gauss law. And then you also had Dalton's law of partial pressure that says that the pressure total is equal to pressure one plus pressure two plus however many pressures of gases there are. So that can keep on going. And by extension, we take Dalton's law of partial pressure and say that this is equal to N1 plus N2. Plus N3 plus however many gases there are times RT over V. So we had those three. Really, I think of these two as the same equation. They're just different variations of that same equation. And then along with this, we had a couple of other pieces of information. One of them was at standard temperature and pressure, STP. And so that these are standard temperature and pressure 0 degrees Celsius and 1 atmosphere. And along with those, we had a molar volume, 22.4 liters equals 1 mole of gas. At STP, we call it a molar volume. So we have certain equations or certain conditions that fit under STP. And the only other thing that I would say here is that our R value is equal to 0.082058 liter atmospheres over moles Kelvin. And that was all the gas law information. And the most tricky of those types of gas law problems were ones that involved molar mass. So where we have molar mass equals grams per mole, which we could say is equal to the grams over N. And so if we're looking at PV equals NRT, then that N is the same N in molar mass. And that allows you to be able to get to molar mass. Along with that, we had gas laws with density, where density equals mass divided by volume. And that's mass over V. And in the PV equals NRT, that volume component in liters is sitting there. And so we can do gas laws with molar mass, we can do gas laws with density, and solving for those types of problems. The only other thing that you had within gas laws that really wasn't part of gas laws, but was part of gases, was mole percent or mole fraction. And in the mole fraction of a gas, what we had was Na divided by, or we could say that the mole percent is equal to Na divided by Na plus Nb plus however many gases there are, Nc. And then you multiply by 100. And that can give you the mole fraction. The other way to get mole fractions besides using moles is that this is equal to, for Na, this is equal to the pressure of A in atmospheres or in torr or millimeters of mercury divided by the pressure of A plus the pressure of B plus the pressure of C. And times 100. And so that we can get the percent, the mole fraction of a gas, either by going through the moles or by going through pressure. And that's just an extension of Dalton's law of partial pressure in coming out of that. So that sort of like summarizes all of the gas laws components, starting with the PV equals NRT and all the way through combined gas law and the different types of gas problems that you can see. So it's like a whole concise component there for gas laws. After gas laws, what else did you have? You had balancing chemical equations, you had some stoichiometry, and I think you started to get into redox equations and oxidation numbers as well. So I don't know, they don't have as many equations that are in there. So after gas laws, you've got balancing chemical equations. And in your balancing chemical equations, let's do C3H6O2 plus CO2 goes to make, oh, plus O2 goes to make CO2. Plus H2O. that in your balancing chemical equations that you're going off and you're making a list of the carbon, the hydrogen, the oxygen, or whatever elements there are. You're making the same list on the right hand and left hand side. You're tallying up how many of each of the elements that you've got. And then you're changing only the coefficients to be able to balance the chemical equation. So we're going in and starting left to right, and any element that appears less than three times, you can balance with the coefficient. And so if we need to balance carbon, we can put a three coefficient here. We rebalance or recount all of the other things that changes. So three times oxygen, three times two is six, plus one is seven. We go and we balance the hydrogen. So that gives me six hydrogen. And recount the oxygen again. Three times two is six, plus three is nine. So we've got to get nine. Over here, we need nine to come out of this. So because there's two that are on this side, what I will do is I will say nine subtract two. That oxygen needs to account for seven. So in order to get a total of nine on the right-hand side, I will do seven halves. That's my third change. So when I do that count, that is going to be two plus seven halves times two, or that's going to be two plus seven. That's going to equal nine, and it checks out. Now, I can't leave it with seven halves, so what I do is I go through and I multiply the whole thing by two, and that multiplies by each of the coefficients. So that gives me a final formula of 2C3H6O2 plus 7O2 goes to make 6CO2 plus 6H2O. And that preserves the equality and gets rid of the fractions. And so there's a balancing chemical equations. Within the chemical equations, once you start stoichiometry and you get into balancing chemical equations, you get into stoichiometry type questions. And the stoichiometry type questions can be really diverse. And we didn't really get a chance to talk about stoichiometry type questions, but they stem from a general roadmap of which now is getting fairly large based on all the different types of pieces of information that we have. So let's take a second and let's build the stoichiometry roadmap, and then we'll see how to use it and apply it in a couple of different situations. So it always starts off grams of A to moles A to moles B to grams B. So that's our general sort of beginning roadmap. And then out of this roadmap, and what I'll do is I'll highlight this one piece here as our mole bridge. Out of this, we can go different directions. Frequently, we want other units of mass other than grams. These could be pounds, these could be kilograms, these could be micrograms, they could be anything. They're just other mass units. And oftentimes, we're coming from other mass units. And we use just our standard conversion factors to be able to get from point A to point B. So that takes care of sort of like all the mass stuff. But then we also had Avogadro's number. And with Avogadro's number, we had molecules or atoms, depending upon what we were dealing with, of A, and we could have molecules or atoms of B. And so we could go into moles of A or atom moles of B into atoms or molecules. And that was dealing with 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd Avogadro's number was the conversion factor that allowed us to do that. Then when we started getting into density and using density, density allows us to take the volume of a material and convert it into a mass of material. So we could have a volume of A. And this could be, instead of volume over here, this could be milliliters of A. And milliliters of A could be converted using its density. And similarly, we could go out over here using density into milliliters of B. So that allows us to be able to come into grams. So density is a thing. And when we start getting into volumes and we're looking at milliliters, this could be other volume units. And likewise, we could go out to other volume units of B. So that's how we can deal with volumes and densities in terms of where they fit in with the roadmap. You also just did PV equals NRT. And when we look at PV equals NRT, you know what, I'm gonna change color here. Because when I went into volumes, let's style this into blue. I'll do the same thing here so that we got some consistency into how these things are colored. And let's take these guys here that are going into Avogadro's number. And let's style these in that color. All right, the other thing that you had is gases, as I was saying, gas laws, PV equals NRT. And moles, when we think about moles A, another way to represent moles A is with the variable N, right? And so N reminds us of PV equals NRT, and what we could be doing is we could be using pressure of A, temperature of A, volume of A, and we could be going through PV equals NRT in order to be able to get the number of moles of A. And so this would be of gas A. And likewise, once we have the number of moles of B, we could come out using PV equals NRT if they give us other information. And we could come out into gas B. And depending upon what information they give us, we could be looking for pressures. We could be looking for temperatures. We could be looking for volumes. But we could come out of PV equals NRT because we have the moles of B. We could be going other places using the gas laws. And there are yet more entryways into this that we haven't discovered yet or that we haven't talked about in the class yet. So there are going to be solutions where we have concentrations where the constituent A is dissolved in some other solvent. And so we could have concentrations that will get us into the moles of A and moles of B. And so there's other ways that are going to come into this yet that we have yet to do. So I'm thinking about inroads and outgrowths of this that will be later, that will be solutions of A and going to solutions of B. And these will be dealing with concentration. But that'll be for later. But for right now, this is everything that we've sort of done in the class and how it connects into stoichiometry. And so it's just an overall large stoichiometry roadmap. And what I would also say is that all of these arrows, while I've drawn them one directional, you can think of them as all bidirectional. That these arrows can go any direction, that they don't, it doesn't have to be a one-way roadmap. That any one of these arrows can be reversed and go a different direction, right? And so when we start dealing with stoichiometry, the types of stoichiometry questions that we have those types of questions are straightforward A to B. Given A, find B. Let's do it that way. They can be, and so that's just a straight stoichiometry type question. The other type can be a limiting reagent problem. I'm going to actually give examples of these. Let's say that we have A, and I'm going to get rid of B there for a second. Let's say that we have A plus B goes to make C plus D. Let's say that we're given X grams of A, find the grams of C. And so this is a general picture of a stoichiometry problem written out sort of in an equation format. And it can be any direction. So it can be not only A, find C, but it can be given D, find C, given D, find B, given B, find A. It can go any direction between the different constituents in there. Limiting reagent problems are a little bit different in that here what you're doing is you're given X grams of A and Y grams of B, and you're asked how many grams of C can we make? And so here what we do is we typically run two stoichiometries, and whichever one gives the smaller amount of C is the limiting reagent, is the correct answer. So that's a limiting reagent type problem. Third type of problem is percent yield type problems. Here, what we do is we give you A plus B goes to make C plus D type of problem. And we give you X grams of A and Y grams of C. This is the actual. Usually they tell you that there's something like excess amounts of B. And what they're asking you to do is from those X grams, they want you to calculate out the theoretical grams through stoichiometry. And then the percent yield is equal to the actual grams divided by the theoretical grams. Times 100%. And so there's still a stoichiometry problem in their foundation, but they give you two different numbers and tell you that a certain yield was obtained and what was the percent yield. Or they could give you the percent yield and they could ask you how much actual yield is obtained from a reagent. And so those are the percent yield type problems. So you have straightforward types of stoichiometry problems, you have limiting reagent problems, you have percent yield type problems, and that really covers the gambit on most of the stoichiometry type problems. And so now it's just a matter of, you know, being able to identify where your starting point is and developing your roadmap and then following your roadmap to be able to go out and solve whatever question it is that you're being asked to solve. Okay. We could take an example of that from a balancing chemical equation, one that we just did here. So we could take this. We can say example. This molecule is, or could be, we don't have to do it by name. I'm looking to see what this would be. Methyl acetate. When 7.62 grams of methyl acetate C3H6O2 is combusted, with excess oxygen, what is the yield, or what is the, let's do it this way, how many grams of water will be formed. So the way that I always tackle these problems when I have one that's like this is I use the balanced chemical equation as my template. So I pull out the pieces of information, the 7.62 grams of that guy, and I write it directly underneath it in the chemical equation. And then whatever it is that they're asking me about, grams of water, and they want to know how much of that is going to be formed, then I write that with my question mark, and that really becomes my roadmap. And in that roadmap, what I'm doing is I'm literally starting from this point and being asked to go to this point. And so my roadmap takes me through those steps right there. And now I just need to substitute that methyl acetate for A and water for B. And my roadmap is already set, developed for me. So my roadmap is going to look like grams of C3H6O2 to moles of C3H6O2 to moles H2O to grams H2O. And in order to do that, I'll need the balanced chemical equation and the coefficients to be able to go through the mole bridge. I'll need the molar mass of the methyl acetate, and I'll need the molar mass of water in order to complete that. So what I do first is I just go ahead and get the molar masses of those things. C3H6O, 3 times 12.01 plus 6 times 1.008 plus 16.00. And I don't worry too much about the sig figs at this point. So that's 58. And I'll just let them run long, whatever they are in the calculator, knowing that I'm going to come back and sort them out later. And water. And then I'll just go ahead and run through that stoichiometry. And the more detailed you are in writing out your stoichiometry in terms of your units, the better off you're going to be. So instead of just writing grams, I'll actually write grams C3H6O2 for every 1 mole, C3H6O2. And the more detailed, like I said, the less mistakes you're going to make. So now I'm going to have moles of C3H6O2 to moles of water. And I get those by going to that balanced chemical equation and finding that it is 2 to 6. For those guys. So let's pull in 2. Let's pull in 6. And then the last part is that molar mass of water. For every 1 mole, H2O. It's 18.016 grams of H2O. Check your units. Make sure that everything is canceling as you expected it to. Make sure that your one unit that you're expecting is in the numerator. Go ahead and calculate it out. Syntax error, you didn't like my multiply and times in there at the same time. I think multiply and divide by there, that should do right. Divided by 2 times 16, yes. So it looks like I'm coming out with 7.091252. This is going to be grams of water. And then, as I said, now we can go back and we can sort out our sig figs and figure out where everything was going. If we're looking at these are all out 2 decimal places. This is probably going to be out 2 decimal places. That's going to be 4 sig figs. I don't need to worry about the rounding. Same thing is happening here. I'm out to the 2nd decimal place. I'll be out to the 2nd decimal place there. That's going to be 4 sig figs. This was 3. These are good to 4. These are good to 4. These are exact. The coefficients are always exact. So the smallest is 3. So that's where I'll do my rounding. And it usually is that something else is creating the rounding other than the molar masses, which is why I don't get too worried about it as I'm punching out the molar masses. So 7.09 grams of H2O formed. Just as an example of how to use that balanced chemical equation as your template. So that's really the key thing, is the template and being able to parse all your data underneath it, particularly when you get into limiting reagent type problems and you have 3 pieces of data. fitting those three pieces of data in underneath the balanced chemical equation where they go so that you can visually see what it is you're trying to do, that's an important part. Same thing with percent yields, because the percent yields can oftentimes be combined with limiting reagents. And so you can have two, three pieces of data oftentimes with these types of problems. And so using that balanced chemical equation as a template to write things underneath and to get a visual start on your roadmap, but then always having that bigger roadmap handy to be able to build from, that's really key. So those are your stoichiometry type problems to be able to deal with. And then after stoichiometry, I think the only other thing that you guys had was really redox. Can we go over a limiting reagent problem? We'll get a chance. Sure, we can do a limiting reagent problem. Let's do the same problem so that we don't have to recalculate out our molar masses. And we'll look at what a limiting reagent problem looks like. So let's do... So with limiting reagent, the way that I like to explain limiting reagent problems is, let's do an explanation real quick before we do it and how it makes sense. Because intuitively, you guys all know how to do this. It's just you haven't really thought about it in this aspect before. So if I take, and I have tires and I have frames, and I'm building bicycles, not the prettiest of bikes. Maybe there's a seat that's on here too. It takes two tires for every frame. And so if I come into a limiting reagent problem and I say that I've got maybe 13 tires and I've got 9 frames, question is, how many bikes can I put together? And the answer is, well, with 9 frames, I could build 9 bikes because it's one frame for every bike. And with 13 tires, because it takes two tires for every bike, I could put together only 6 bikes. And after those 6 bikes, I would have one tire left over. And so what winds up happening is I run out of tires before I run out of frames. And the smaller number is the number that I can create. So this is what could actually be made. And this one becomes limiting. It's the limiting reagent, because it ran out first. So a limiting reagent problem is as simple as that. It's just finding out which thing runs out first, looking at how they combine 2-to-1 or 3-to-1 or 5-to-1 or whatever it is. That's how we go through and do a limiting reagent problem. But we have to do it with stoichiometry and we have to do it with mass. So let's say that... yeah, it is still in there. Okay, style black. Let's say that this is our equation. And instead of excess oxygen, let's say that that's C3H6O2, is combusted in a chamber with, I don't know which one of these is going to run out first, but let's go ahead and say with 109.7 grams of oxygen gas. How many grams of water can be made? Okay, so using it as a template again, what I've got is I've got the 237.2 grams of methyl acetate. So under here, 237.2 grams. For the O2, I've got 109.7 grams of oxygen gas. And for water, I want to know how much water is going to be able to be produced. So I'm going to go this way and this way, and I'm going to ask which one of these is the smallest. So I'm actually going to run two stoichiometries, and I'm going to go from the grams of C3H6O2 to the moles of C3H6O2 to the moles of H2O and to the grams of H2O. And in the second equation, I will go grams of O2 to moles of O2 to moles of H2O to grams of H2O. And I'll ask which one of those gives the smallest amount. And we've already done the rest of the work for the molar masses, so we can just use the molar masses that we've already created. And we'll run those two stoichiometries. Let me go ahead and move them down a little bit. Let's call this one A. Let's call this one B. So A, 237.2. C3H6O2. For every, let's go back and get it, 58.078. grams of C3H6O2, I get one mole. For every mole of C3H6O2, I get a certain number of moles of water. I think that was 2 to 6, correct? And then for every one mole of water, it was 18.016 grams of water. All right, so we'll get that value, 237.2 divided by 58.078 divided by 2 times 6 times 18.016, 220.740824 grams of water. And we can get sig figs in a minute. So let's run B and find out what B gives us. So 109.7 grams of O2. We didn't get the molar mass of O2, but O2, oxygen is 16 grams per mole, and we just multiply it by 2. So for every one mole of O2, it's 32 grams of O2. Now we go through the stoichiometry. For every mole of O2, I need to know how many moles of water. And I know that it's 6 for the water, but let's go see, it's 7 for the O2. And then this last part is always the same. For every 1 mole of H2O, it's 18.016 grams of H2O. So 109.7 times 32 times 6 divided by 7 times 18.016. That, did I do it right? 109.7 times 32 times 6 divided by 7 times, yep, everything's right. 54,208.599771. Interesting that it's quite that many grams of water. Makes me feel like I must have done the math wrong someplace, but I've double checked it. 109.7 times 32 grams per mole. Ah, I see where I made a mistake. Okay, I did make a mistake. Anybody else catch it? What mistake I made? See if you can find it. I made a mistake someplace.
Is it the grams and the 1 mole?
It is for the oxygen.
Right.
What's wrong with it?
It should be grams and not moles. It should be upside down.
It's upside down, exactly. Very good. Good eyes. It's this right here. The units weren't canceling properly, and I made a mistake when I did it. I was too busy thinking about the grams per mole and not watching canceling my units. That it was upside down. Otherwise, the grams here weren't going to cancel here. And I knew that I was off because this number was just far too large. So that number being as large as it was tipping me off that I had made a mistake somewhere. And it wasn't in the calculator. It was in the actual formula. So it should be 109.7, good eyes, divided by 32, times 6, divided by 7, times 18.016. Excellent. Okay, that's 52.938. 085, and that is grams of H2O, and that is a much more reasonable number. Okay, so the smallest number is this one. So that means that this is limiting and that the oxygen is going to run out first, and all I can make is the 52.938. Now I want to go through and do my sig figs and get the actual answer real quick. So this is going to be 4 exact. I think this one is out at 4 as well. So that means I'm 4 sig figs here. And this is going to equal 52.94 grams of H2O produced. Excellent. All right, so there's a limiting reagent problem. And like I said, take it back to bicycles. If you can take it back to bicycles, intuitively, the bicycle problem makes sense. It's no different other than the fact that we have masses that are here and we need to go through the mole bridge to put it into count so that they can be directly compared. And that's the only difference between the two types of problems. Otherwise, the problem is done exactly the same way. We just run the two stoichiometries. We run out A, we run out B, and then we see which one is smaller. The smallest one is the one that you can actually make. So there's your limiting reagent problem. Okay. And then I don't know how much you guys have done on redox, other than oxidation numbers and being able to identify oxidation numbers. And we can go over oxidation numbers a little bit because I haven't given you the rules on oxidation numbers. But I think this is probably pretty much the meat of the types of problems that you should be expecting on this next exam, right? It should really be the gas law type stuff. Particularly, we know how both of the instructors like to include the gas laws with molar mass and the gas laws with density. So having all of these equations at your fingertips and knowing how to use each one of these types of equations to be able to arrive at that, being able to combine the equations with molar mass and gas law and density and gas law. And balancing, which is probably the easiest of the skills that are in these problems. And then that big stoichiometry roadmap is really sort of the big picture of where everything is going. And that balancing chemical equations has to do with the mole bridge. It's figuring out the ratios here that when you do a balanced chemical equation, that balanced chemical equation is what gives you the mole bridge ratios. It's the production of the conversion factors for that arrow right there. All right. Any other big questions? I'm kind of going through these. I was going to kind of wait and see what questions you guys had. Barring none of the questions, I decided that just sort of reviewing the major topics might be a good idea, which was good. It brought up some questions in terms of limiting reagent problems, but it seems like you guys are either reluctant to ask questions or everything's looking pretty solid. Maybe a percent yield problem, sure. We could do a percent yield problem, show how those fit. With a percent yield problem, tagging it on to, well, let's create a new one. Let's do this. Iron is produced by heating iron 3 oxide or in a blast furnace with carbon to produce iron, just Fe, and carbon dioxide. If 207.9 kilograms of Fe2O3 are heated with excess carbon and produce and produce, let's say, I don't want to make this too big, and I'm trying to do it in my head. I'm going to say like 62.9 kilograms of iron. What is the percent yield of the reaction? Okay, so first off, what we're missing is a chemical equation. So we got to come up with a chemical equation. We're using Fe2O3 and heating it with carbon to produce iron, Fe, and carbon dioxide, CO2. This is a gas, a solid. These things get combined together, the gas leaves, and we produce iron ore. So that's the raw, unbalanced chemical reaction. And we have to go through and we have to balance it before we can do anything else. So we have iron, oxygen, carbon. Where we start in terms of balancing, these come in threes and these come in twos. So in order to make these two things balance together, it looks like I'm probably going to have to do a little bit of balancing in a unique way, recognizing that they come in threes and recognizing that they come in twos. I'm going to opt to multiply the first one by two and the second one by three to get the same number of oxygens on both sides. So that means, I didn't do my tally here first. Let me do my tally first. I had two, I had three, I had one, two, and one. I'm balancing by looking at the oxygens first, and I'm going through and I'm getting six oxygens and four irons. On the left, I will get six oxygens, and that gives me three carbons on the right. Now I can balance the carbons easily enough. And the irons easily enough. And everything comes into balance. Now I'll use that balanced chemical equation to map out what it is they want me to actually do. So I have two Fe2O3 combining with three carbons, going to make four irons and three CO2. And they give me 207.9 kilograms of that material. And excess of carbon. And I'm producing 62.9 kilograms there. And that 62.9 is my actual. And so what I need to do is I need to figure out the theoretical. And that theoretical yield, when I divide the actual yield by the theoretical yield, and I multiply it by 100, that equals the percent. And so I need to get that theoretical yield, and that comes from the stoichiometry. So in order to go through and do that, I need to run the stoichiometry, and I'm going to go from kilograms of Fe2O3 to grams of Fe2O3 to moles out to the moles of just iron, out to the grams of iron, and then out to the kilograms of iron. So I'm utilizing that other mass units extension of the roadmap in order to be able to get that. But now to do that, I need the molar mass of iron before I can really get going too far. And I need to figure out what that thing actually weighs. So periodic table, iron is, 55.845. So I have 2 times 55.845 plus 3 times 16. So that's 159.69 grams per mole. And the iron itself is the 55.845. So there's my two molar masses that I need, and I don't need to calculate anything else. We'll go through and we'll get that theoretical yield. So we're starting with 207.9 kilograms. Fe203. For every 1 kilogram of Fe203, I get 1,000 grams. Fe203 gives me 1 mole. And for every 2 moles of iron oxide, I'm getting 4 moles of just iron. My iron molar mass is that for every 1 mole of iron, it is 55.845. grams of Fe, and then for every 1,000 grams of Fe, I get 1 kilogram. So I was able to fit it all on there. Notice that this conversion factor going from kilograms to grams and back from grams to kilograms cancel each other out. And so I can put them into the calculator, but they're going to cancel each other out. 207.9 divided by 159.69 times 4 divided by 2 times 55.845. Syntax error once again. Equals 145.408923 kilograms of iron produced. Now, remember that I only made 62.9 kilograms, and I want to figure out what the percent yield is. So it would be good to know how many sig figs this has in it before proceeding. We could use it, but it would be good to know. So this is 4. This is exact. This one is 5. Exact. I was at 5 here in the way that I used it. Exact. So it looks like 4. So I'm out to that far, but I'll use the whole value. And I'll say that the percent yield now is equal to the actual yield divided by the theoretical yield. times 100, which is going to be equal to 62.9. of iron divided by 145.408 and change kilograms of iron. Multiply that by 100. Notice that the kilograms of iron cancel each other out, which is why it comes down to a unitless value. So that is 62.9 divided by my answer times 100. 43.257317. That's a percent. And the sig figs, we said we were good to 4 here. That was my 4 sig figs. This was only good to 3. So I'm good out to 3. This is not a round even rule. Even though it's a 5 that I'm rounding to, it's greater than 5 because it's 57317. So this becomes 43.3% yield. Not a very good yielding reaction, but I was trying to not have it be greater than 100% because I didn't want it to be confusing. And so I undershot it in my mental calculations a little bit to make sure that I was coming out in the right amount. So sort of a crappy yield out of this reaction, but that's how we would go through and do it. So we take the values that they give us. We calculate the theoretical amount, which is the stoichiometric amount. We divide the actual by the stoichiometric, multiply by 100, and that gives us the percent yield. So they're just like a stoichiometry problem. It's just that we're using that theoretical yield at the end with the actual yield to then figure out what the percent yield is over on the overall reaction.
So for these problems, just like the one we tried right now, you suggest we go through the roadmap you made at the beginning, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. So the roadmap that I was making at the beginning, all the way up here, for this problem, we started out here at other mass units. We started out in kilograms. And then we were asked to go all the way to kilograms of the other material. So we started off with kilograms of Fe2O3, and we were asked to find kilograms of just the iron itself. And so we went through a roadmap that went straight on through all the way out to here. All right, can you guys hang on 1 second? I gotta grab this call real quick. Hang on, I'll be right back. Hello, this is Jason. Good. Is there a chance I can call you back in a little bit? Okay. Once. Okay. 505. Okay. And same number that just called. Okay, awesome. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Okay, sorry. Wasn't sure if that was something I needed to grab with all the other things that I've got going on. So quick thing there, I'll call them back later. But yeah, that's how we go through and do it is we identify where we're starting, where we're going, and then whatever route it takes us through that roadmap, that's the roadmap we follow. And we just replace the A and the B with whatever it is that A and B have been decided to be. So in this case, A is going to be Fe2O3. And so every one of the A's gets replaced by Fe2O3, and B becomes iron, and every one of the B's gets replaced by that. And that determines our roadmap all the way through. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you. That actually is very helpful.
Excellent. And so it just determines, you know, if you're starting with something else, if you're starting with molecules or atoms, or you're asked to go to atoms or molecules, then your roadmap may go, you know, down this direction. and you just follow that roadmap wherever it leads you. So you just need to identify where it is you're starting on that roadmap and where it is you're going. And it'll take you to the right place every time. Okay. Any other big questions coming up? And that's okay if that's all we do today. That's a good day's work for reviewing sort of like the content of what you guys have done, because those are some big conceptual items. So we covered the stoichiometry, we covered the three different types of stoichiometry problems. We covered that stoichiometry roadmap, which I think to me, if I were going to say, you know, what is Chem3 about? This is the Chem3 class in a nutshell, is this stoichiometry type. There's other things that are within Chem3 that we cover, but by and large, the majority of the types of problems that we cover in Chem3 is learning this roadmap and how this roadmap connects, and all the inroads and outroads. And like I said, solutions can go on here, and yet there are some other information that can go on here. And the interesting thing is, as you go from Chem3 to Chem1A, this roadmap does not change at all. And in fact, the types of questions that they ask sometimes includes more information, but the majority of what you do in Chem1A and in Chem1B involves going through this roadmap and understanding how to use this roadmap and building new inroads and outroads out of this roadmap. And they all go through the mole bridge, and there's no way to bypass the mole bridge. Every single inroad and outroad of this goes through that mole bridge, which is really kind of cool. So when you want to know what Chem3 is about, This is the most important component of what you're getting out of Chem3. So it all comes back to this roadmap. All right, if there's no further questions, I think that's all we've got for today. Like I said, I'm not going to have any homework assignment that is due on this. This was just a review to give you guys a little boost for the test that you got coming up tomorrow. I think for Lucas's class? Yeah, Lucas's class, I think, is having the test tomorrow. I'm not sure when Cisco's test is coming up, but it should be coming up pretty soon. And those are some of the major concepts that you can be looking forward to. So making sure you're solid on those. All right. And then I will get that homework assignment up from last week. And we'll make it due this next week. And so, and that was just a balancing equations worksheet that I've got for you. So you can be looking for that for this next week. Okay.
I'm just going to ask for a quick request.
Sure.
Would you be able to post our notes from today soon before the exam? I know for Lucas, we have it on Thursdays, so it'd be helpful to have these couple slides.
Absolutely. Alejandra, I will get those up today. In fact, I could do that right after we end here. I'll put them up right now.
Thank you.
You got it. All right. With no further questions, I'm going to let you guys go, and I will see you next week. All right. Take care, guys. And I will work on getting these up right now.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. All right.